It's time to talk about college sports. From Division I to Division III, some of the best college sports in the country are played right here in the state of Wisconsin. It's time for the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. Let's turn it over to host Don Wachillas, only on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Once again, welcome in on a Thursday night. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan, a radio.com station. Joined, as always, by the professor Dan Underberg. Austin Delaney on the other side of the table pushing all the buttons this evening. Thanks for being here, Austin. We appreciate it. And in conjunction, Professor, with everything that has taken place this week.
You sure you want to do this?
Yes, we have to go there. It is time for the Journey House College Sports Show to give its State of the Union with regards to college basketball. Austin, if you would, please. Yes, my friends. The state of college basketball is a cluster, and I can't say what I want to say.
You can say
if
dumpster
we want to be on the air next week. I don't know, Daniel, if we've ever seen the state of a collegiate sport in such disarray than we have with college basketball this year. And we can thank the team 60 miles west of us.
Well, I'm saying,
for running neck and neck with the Jayhawks of Kansas to see who is the biggest dumpster fire in collegiate basketball this season. So where shall we begin?
Well, you've got municipal government, you've got county government, you got state, then you got federal. So pick. I mean, do you want to go big or go home, or do you want to?
Let's go Badgers.
Let's go.
Why not? Let's go Badgers. So we've been talking, obviously, about the whole Kobe King situation, and then we were ready, Daniel. We were ready to really get today going,
to be done, to move on.
Not only to move on, but to talk about the bounce back that was Saturday against Michigan State.
But they are the Badgers.
But the bounce back against Michigan State, excuse me, a team that they played for their coach on Saturday.
Yeah, you bet.
You know what
I
mean? It was like they rallied the troops. They played for their coach. They took down a ranked team at home. And you thought, okay, maybe life will get a little bit better. And then last night comes along against the Gophers, and we'll get to that one a little bit later, and everything kind of came back down, crashing around us again with this team, because we had a team again last night who didn't understand what
28%.
A jump shot looked like. It was brutal, and I want to hear about the raised floor on the barn and everything else, because the Gophers sure didn't have a problem putting the ball in the hoop last night the way we did. But then to add to the dumpster fire, to add to this neck-and-neck race with the Kansas Jayhawks,
we had our
about
own version of an investigation.
What team can really screw up the most, we get breaking news this afternoon that the strength and conditioning coach for our beloved Wisconsin Badgers resigns, Eric Helland, after inappropriate comments regarding a story being told to the players in the midst of a workout session, thought it was handled internally. Somehow the news gets out. He brings it up prior to the Michigan State game, and a few days later now, he resigns his position. I go back to the dumpster fire. Every time I'm ready for the Badgers to right the ship, this kind of mess happens.
No, this feels a little like a Viking funeral when the boat just kind of goes off into the horizon on flames.
Yep.
You know, it's just, and you know there's a body in there, but you don't know whose it is. Number one, I just, this is the way the season is going. We've known this for a while, and I say that, you know, they beat the Michigan State Spartans, and everybody's, you know, I watched the entire game. It was incredible. You know, I'm there with a couple friends watching it, and I'm like, all right, that's good. But we had no right to expect that suddenly this team was going to move forward. I mean, but it's what they've done all year is go up, go down, go up, go down.
But the downs have exceeded anything that I think we could have forethought.
In previous years.
Yes. But even this year, I don't think any of us would have thought that going into the Michigan State game, you would have had your star guard quit, your other guard suspended for forearming a kid right in the Jujubes, and then you come back, you beat Michigan State, but now your strength and conditioning coach has resigned. And let's face it, the man resigned before the axe came down.
Right.
Before the hammer came down and he was going to be fired, they gave him a little wiggle room to pull a plug himself so that somewhere down the line he might have the opportunity to find another job within that realm.
Mm-hmm.
But losing last night is one thing. To then have another story outside of the court happen to this Badger team, that to me is the surprise. That is something under Barry Alvarez we've not seen in Madison, and yet this year it seems to be happening more. Now, the Bo Ryan thing, yeah, but this just seems to be compiling. You get what I mean? We've had stories, don't get me wrong. It seems to be compounding one week after the next that every time you hope life will settle a little bit, what happens? We get another story in addition to some crappy shooting last night.
It's a little like saying, well, I'm sure it can't get any worse than this.
Yes.
You know, and then something else pops up. It's like a bad comedy is what it comes down to. And now you're kind of punch drunk. It's like, oh, now what else is going to happen? You know,
yes.
What, you know, it's kind of like if the analogy of the car isn't working, what's wrong? First, the door falls off, the windshield falls off, all four tires come off. That's kind of the way it feels. I know there was some talk about, after they beat Michigan State, well, you know, Wisconsin's still in this. It has the opportunity to make an NCAA tournament. You know what? Put me on record. Oh, hell no. I don't think they're going, and I think there's just too – I don't even know if it's good for them at this point.
So let's move forward with the state of the union in the realm of college basketball. Because
it gets better somewhere else, right?
It does. Okay. It gets better everywhere else. So Houston – ranked 25 this week, but you got a kid named Dejan Giroux who's suspended for a game for doing what? Biting a kid on the leg. What? It's just like, Dan, you just said it's the Viking funeral as the boat goes into the distance?
Yeah.
The fire just keeps, instead of going out, it just keeps igniting into a bomb fire as it makes its way to the horizon.
Yeah. Just...
So you got a kid who bites another kid on the leg. In college basketball, this is not football. This is not...
It's not wrestling. It's a professional wrestling.
This is not wrestling. We ain't wrestling out here. Austin,
they have standards.
Austin, we could understand if this is the Michigan-Ohio State game where the guys are wrestling the shoe off to try and slow some people down. We're talking basketball, and we're biting people on... What is this? Tyson Holyfield? I mean, it's getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah, it's quite baffling.
Suddenly, Austin's the voice of reason.
Yeah. We don't need that here. It's a sports radio show, man.
See, I have all too much experience with the biting incident. I used to wrestle back in middle school, and as I was pinning a kid, kids started clamping down on my stomach. So I'm all for no biting in sports.
Oh, that's one of those where you wish the radio had visual right there as well. So we get stories like that. We've obviously had the Davidson thing with the forearm below the belt. We had the DeSalt.
Biting the leg, though. I mean, you've got to have the jaw all the way open to be able to manage that.
Well, all right now. D'Souza over at, if I'm saying the kid's name right, at Kansas, in the midst of the brawl with the chair up over his head, gets a 12-game suspension. I mean, it just seems like this year we go one thing after the next. And then let's actually talk about the game and how bad the three-point shooting is this year. Three-point shooting in college basketball has now dropped to 33%. And It's been a few years since it's been anywhere close to being that low, and yet the number of shots haven't decreased.
Oh, no.
So we're still chucking it up at the rate that we had been in the past, but we're sure not making it. And the level of play, Daniel, has definitely fallen off to where what we'll get to in a minute, that bubble this year with regards to the tournament,
mm-hmm.
I think is going to be epic when you see some of the names that are on the bubble as far as whether they're going to go in or out.
Well, and for me, I'm going to go on a different bubble a little bit. We're talking about the three-point shot, and we've got the draft coming up in June. You know, I think there are going to be plenty of European players going, thank you. You know,
sure.
we can make that shot. All of a sudden, the NBA scouts are going to be forced to look in different spots to find players that can play the NBA game, which is now focused behind the arc. And so what are the options? If you guys in the NCAA can't make the shot, they're going to have to look in other places. So it is amazing to me because we have become accustomed to when the NBA makes a trend change.
Yeah.
The NCAA follows suit, and then we begin to see improvement in the NCAA players in terms of being able to do that. What has been amazing is that it hasn't just – the three-point shot in terms of percentage hasn't just lowered. It hit a brick and fell off the cliff.
Yeah. It's like somebody took the air out of the balloon and just watched it sail right to the ground, which then, on a positive note, makes what Marcus Howard is doing – even that much more impressive at Marquette, while the rest of the world seems to be falling off the deep end. Though Marcus struggled last week, and we'll talk about a little bit with Ben Steele, who will join us around 8:20 from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But his fall off, in my mind, against DePaul had more to do with the fact that I'm wearing a mask because I got a fractured nose than it had to do with my shooting ability from beyond the arc.
Right.
So prior to the fracture of the old nostrils there, his ability to hit from what is now this new arc that has gone into effect this year, the international dateline, so to speak, it's just made what Marcus Howard is doing even that much more impressive in relation to everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what he's continuing to do is continue to lead even though he's a marked man.
Yeah.
You know, people understand that the whole team, and we've known this for 2-3 years now, Marquette rotates around the health and the ability of Marcus Howard at any one point in time. And so he's continuing, look, Marquette's going to make it in, okay, and they're going to continue to play the style of game that they do, and it's going to get more and more difficult for Marcus Howard as we get closer to the tournament season. You know, Big East Conference tournament leading into the NCAA, and he continues to fight. You know, he continues to lead by example, and he continues to lead just in the terms of sheer will. So.
The kid's a gamer.
Yeah, and I've got more respect for him now than I have. And I loved him. Don't get me wrong. This isn't a criticism. But what he's pulling off this year is incredible.
Yeah. All right. So we'll talk Marquette a little bit around 8:20 with Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But as we continue our State of the Union here in college basketball.
I'm not going to shake your hand.
So, are you going to rip? You're going to rip
gonna
this
rip
up after that,
yeah,
boy. All right. Let's look at what potentially could be a Final Four. Now, obviously, there's no brackets out, so we could be throwing four teams out there that end up on the same quadrant. We're not sure yet. But what I'm getting at by saying this, guys, is that this year is going to be crazy as far as what the Final Four ends up being, at least projecting forward as far as what we've seen so far in the season, all right? So when you look at a team like Kansas, who should be dominating and are on the floor to a certain degree, I keep waiting for the stuff that's happened off the floor to catch up with the Jayhawks and watch them at some point implode, whether it's around Sweet 16 or the Great Eight. I don't see them getting to a Final Four. Our normal Blue Bloods, Duke doesn't look like Duke.
Nope.
North Carolina might not even get in the tournament this year as they're hovered around 500. And Virginia, though playing okay, it's not the Virginia of last year's national championship. So then give me some teams. I'm going to come to both of you guys here. Give me some teams who you think – Oz just looked at me like, are you kidding me? Just let me sit back here and be quiet. Give me some teams. Daniel, I'll start with you first. That you think you would see come Final Four time?
Well, I'm going to go with my old standby on this one, Don, and I am going to go with Michigan State because that's what they do. Okay. Tom Izzo gets that team rolling right about now. I do think that they're the strongest team in the Big Ten. I think with his coaching and their pedigree and their, what do you want to call it, their history, they know what they're doing once they get into the NCAA tournament. So I will go with that one. But I would, man, would I love to see a San Diego State there? Would I love to see a Dayton there for just for my own, you know, pleasure?
Yeah.
Just to be able to see that because it wouldn't be the Blue Buds. It would be something different. They would have the chance, kind of like Butler was a few years ago when they went to back-to-back.
Yeah.
That's kind of the same experience I'd like to have where you're almost, if you're going to the game, if you're going to the Final Four, you're there for the joy of basketball.
You know? Are there for the joy of basketball, but I can tell you that if I were traveling this year and Dayton, the Flyers, were part of the Final Four, their student section better be off the chain to make it enjoyable. Because Dayton would not be one I'd be spending all this money for tickets, hotel, and airfare to go down and see the Dayton
Flyers. Yeah, well,
people
went down and watched Loyola Chicago 2 years ago. They were down there in San Antonio.
I got you.
And so I think it – look, it's boring when it's the same teams every year. And I get that the same teams have the best talent and you want the best teams down there.
Yeah.
But it's – for me as a fan, maybe I'm atypical – I like seeing the different teams pop up there every now and again. It's just refreshing. Kind of like the Super Bowl. I don't need to see the Patriots going to one more Super Bowl. I'm happy to see Chiefs go in there and any other team that can get in there. But I like kind of seeing the new blood get in.
Yeah. Austin, give me a couple teams that you think at this point in the midst of all this chaos could find themselves in the Final Four.
Well, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, just with how, you know, untypical this season has been for college basketball. The top team in the country right now, Baylor, you know, it'd be nice to see them get in there. Just a team that you don't normally see get that deep. And how you were kind of talking about how you like to see, you know, different waves of teams in there. Florida State's one. I have some, you know, good family friends that, you know, are alma mater of Florida State. So I'm rooting for the Seminoles to make a run there.
And Leonard Hamilton is a heck of a coach. So when you're talking about Tom Izzo before, Dan, with Michigan State, Leonard Hamilton down at Florida State has also built themselves a program that we're so used to talking about Florida State on the football side that we're not necessarily, I think, programmed always to think of Florida State
right.
on the basketball side.
You're right.
But Leonard Hamilton has got a really nice squad down there this year. The one for me to watch, and I agree with the Florida State, I agree with potentially Michigan State. I think Dayton is really good this year, and as much as I'm poo-pooing Dayton.
And their fans.
Their fans, yes. I got a ring in that fire by any means. But I think Dayton would be there. The one really for me to watch is Seton Hall.
Oh, yeah,
Seton Hall,
call.
To me, Miles Powell at the point guard position is a man amongst boys. And he's got an edge about him where he wants to take over a game, and he's got no problem being physical. You know, I watch him and Marcus Howard go at it in some Big East play, and he's a tough out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. On both ends of the floor, that kid can play some ball to the point where he reminds me of Sam Cassell in this regard. I would imagine if you're a Seton Hall fan, Miles Powell for president. You know
sure.
what I mean?
Right.
When you're against him? Nah, I don't want to see that kid at all, you know. But his tenacity on the floor, I think, is one that really
I agree.
Would help Seton Hall go far. Well, there was. Go ahead, rip it up, Dan. That a boy. as the speech
I'll
gets
keep going,
ripped
you
up.
Keep talking.
All right, you just go ahead and keep ripping it up. We're going to take a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk with Ben Steele of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We'll talk some Marquette. We'll get to it next. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on The Fan. Once again, welcome in. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan, a radio.com station. Don't forget, you keep it right here after the Bucks game tonight against the Philadelphia 76ers down at the Fiserv Forum. It's the Pick and Save Pro Hoops postgame show with Bill Baby Tao Schmidt. He'll be here taking your calls and reactions to tonight's game. as they make their way into the third quarter. Again, that's following the Bucks 76ers matchup. We jump right to the great Midwest Bank hotline and bring in our friend from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Ben Steele joins us. Benjamin, how you doing, sir?
Hey, good. How you doing today? Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate always you taking some time to join us here on the Journey House College Sports Show. So it's been a bit of a quiet week, Ben, with the fact that Marquette's had the better part of, what, 8 days off and will take the floor again on Sunday against Butler. In covering this team, was this one of those quirks in the schedule, so to speak, where it gave the team a much-needed rest and a time to kind of regroup and refine some of the things that Coach Wojciechowski wanted them to work on?
Yeah, I mean, the bye week couldn't have fell at a better spot for this Marquette team. They got a couple players that are banged up, most notably Marcus Howard. I'm sure you guys saw him play the last game against DePaul in the mask. He's got a little fracture in his nose that he suffered against Xavier, so this gives him an extra week. I don't know if he's going to be completely healed. I'm sure he'll be wearing the mask again Sunday against Butler, but just gives him a chance to get used to that a little more. Greg Elliott, who missed six games with an ankle injury, came back. I think he played 7 or 8 minutes in the last game against DePaul. This gives him another week to get ready. Theo John's been banged up. Jace Johnson's been banged up. So the week off is good, and it comes ahead of several big games on the schedule. You know, Butler on Sunday obviously is a big one, and then they go at Villanova after that next Wednesday, the 12th. And Creighton back at home. So those are three really good games for this Marquette team. This is a key stretch right here.
Yeah, it is a big stretch with these three coming up. And so Butler being at home, the first stop in that three-game series. And Butler has really climbed the ladder in the Big East, so to speak, as far as their talent has gone. This is not the Butler of old, shall we say, where, you know, that was almost a given as far as a mark in the win column. But this game on Sunday is going to be a true test here for the Golden Eagles.
Yeah, the team has played a couple weeks ago, Friday night game, late January, and went into overtime. Some crazy stuff happened in that game. But Marquette was in control near the end, and they kind of let the game slip out of their hands at the end. Aaron Thompson, probably Butler's best defender, perimeter defender at least, he sat out that game. He's back. He came back Butler's previous game. Greg Elliott, who I mentioned before, he was out in that game. So a couple of players add into that mix, and it'll be interesting. The teams are pretty evenly matched.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more on that one, as we're talking with Ben Steele and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the great Midwest Bank hotline. Ben, how, in being around the team, how has Marcus Howard adjusted to having to wear that mask? Something that you fracture your nose like that, it almost appears that'll be something he'll be wearing for the remainder of this season.
Yeah, I think so. He said after that last game, he's only played that one game against DePaul in the mask. He said it bothered him a little bit, just kind of adjusting it during the game and, you know, having to move around a little bit. But as you guys know, you guys have watched Marcus Howard, man. Nothing's going to stop him from putting up shots, man.
No.
The mask isn't going to curtail any of that.
No, you could blindfold Marcus. He's still going to put up shots from wherever he is.
I think if you ripped off both of his arms, he'd still find a way to put up 20 shots.
Yeah, I think that's a visual. We'll just leave alone right there.
Sorry, yeah. My Python right now.
I don't wish that on him.
No, I know. Ben, Kobe McEwen has really been a heaven sent to this team in looking for an alternative to Marcus Howard when it comes to scoring and leadership and just command of the floor. If you wouldn't mind talking for a moment about what Kobe McEwen has meant to this team.
Yeah, he's been really good in clutch moments this year. You know, even in games where he struggled for, you know, the first 36, 38 minutes, he's come on down the stretch. I mean, most notably against on the road, double overtime victory over Xavier. He just took over down the stretch, scored, I think, 15 straight points, 8 straight at the end of regulation and 7 points in the first overtime, all Marquette's points in that overtime, that he's just, he becomes a different player in the clutch. And what's key about him, he's a very physical guy. He's built kind of like a running back, almost. And he's, at the end of close games, you know, most of these big East games have been, you know, really close, just one or two possession games. But he's really been seeking contact, you know, at the end of games when teams are in the bonus. And he's a really, really good free throw shooter. So that's been really key for Marquette with these close games. Having him and Marcus Howard, you know, two really good free throw shooters with the ball in their hands at the end of these close games where they, you know, they can either, you know, sink free throws that kind of salt away the victories.
Yeah, Ben, if there's been one, I think, constant here so far this season, whether we're talking Marquette or Wisconsin, the constant is the lack of consistency. It's one game, they look incredibly good, almost unbeatable, and the next game, not much. Has this team, in your opinion, found its stride yet? Have they found their stride? Is this what the hallmark of this season is going to be, this up-and-down kind of a thing? Or do you think this team can figure out during this week off before heading into this tough stretch, whatever that rhythm is to kind of get them to where I think a lot of us thought they would be, including Wojciechowski coming into the season talking about this being the most athletic team he's ever coached?
Yeah, I still think this Marquette team has a level that they can get to, especially the last couple games that Big East played. They haven't been that good defensive team that they're capable of. Like you mentioned, all the athleticism they have, all the length that they play, you know, all five positions. I thought this team coming into the season that they would force a lot of turnovers. That hasn't been the case. So I think that's where this Marquette team needs to step it up a little bit, just the defensive end, forcing turnovers. They've really struggled in pick-and-roll situations against DePaul. The Charlie Moore, Paul Reed pick-and-roll is just killing them most of the game. Same thing the last time they played Butler, you know, Kamar Baldwin. I think he scored the last 12 points in regulation for Butler. Most of them were just off pick-and-roll situations. And so that's what I'm going to be watching this game against Butler, how they defend Kamar Baldwin in those pick-and-roll situations. So that's where this Marquette team can turn it up a notch.
Ben, I want to go back to that DePaul game, and I know you cover Marquette, and you're not following DePaul like a reporter would down in Chicago area, but one of the things that has struck me about DePaul this year is that's a team that's incredibly talented, a team going into really Big East play that a lot of people thought should have been ranked in the top 25 based on how they were performing in their non-conference schedule, and yet they've not even come close to living up to their billing. And one of the things I kept thinking about as the game wound down at the Fiserv this past week with the Blue Demons was DePaul finds a way to lose. Mentality is like they just it was like they were hanging on and hoping not to mess up. And once that mistake happened, it was like, you know, the Titanic, the hole opened up, the thing flooded, and down they went. It's really strange to see teams with that type of athletic ability. The mentality aspect of it, how it affects their play on the floor.
Yeah, a couple of games that I've watched at DePaul this year, they've had pretty sizable leads in the second half. I mean, they were up 9 on Seton Hall late in the second half, and they blew that game right before they played Marquette. You mentioned the non-conference. They beat Iowa, they beat Minnesota, they beat Texas Tech. I mean, solid non-conference wins. And you look at, I think they're 1-9 in conference. And, you know, a lot of those games have been, they're not getting blown out by 20 or 30 every night. A lot of them are close. And, you just, something about down the stretch, they just kind of fall apart against Marquette. Marquette threw a zone defense at them, I think it was around the 5-minute mark, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And then just like, DePaul just like was flustered. They didn't know what to do. And then that just, it spiraled on them, like you said. They just didn't know how to respond to that. They just found a way to lose, like you said.
And we're talking with Ben Steele from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Ben, it just seemed like Coach Wojciechowski knew at that point, All he had to do was what you just described, which was fluster them. And once they would get into that state of mind, it would be really difficult for them to snap out of it, so to speak. And they spiraled like they have so many times this season. Ben, with the Big East tournament now really on the horizon, we're only a couple of weeks away. Who do you think will come out of the Big East on top tournament-wise and get that automatic bid into the NCAA tournament, just kind of based on where play is right now?
Yeah, I've been really high on the Creighton team. Of course, they, you know, I say that after they, you know, lost by 17 to Providence or whatever it was the other day. But they just have a lot of good shooters, and their offense is just very, very elite. So in a tournament setting, they don't get the ball in the basket. So I'm high on that Creighton team.
You're high on Creighton. Okay, then with that said, as Marquette makes its way down the stretch, again, we're a little over a month away. How do you see Marquette's chances of not only getting into the tournament, but what kind of damage could they do in the tournament depending upon? Go ahead and fill that part in.
Okay, you said Big East tournament or NCAA tournament? Is that what you're talking about?
NCAA tournament, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. When I've talked to you guys in the past, I've been pretty bullish on Marquette's NCAA tournament chances. I'm sure nobody in the field is going to want to see a team with Marcus Howard across the bracket from them, right?
Right.
It's just a scary team. You never know, like, to get just a couple of hot games, and Marquette wins two games and off to the second weekend. So I've said it before the season. I was this Marquette team had the talent to get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Then I guess I got to stick to that.
And it seems like this would be the year, if it's going to happen, this would be it, just because as we spent time in the first segment, how chaotic college basketball is this year.
Yeah. There's no really elite teams, and Marquette's got an elite scorer. And, you know, like I mentioned, if their defense, if they could just get more consistency on the defensive end, a consistent defense plus Marcus Howard, that's a dangerous combination.
All right, Ben, thanks as always for your time. Yeah. Enjoy the game against Butler on Sunday, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
That's Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. And, Daniel, I think if there's anything we could say for whether we're talking Marquette or Wisconsin, Ben said it there, closing everything out, consistency. It just the consistency, you know, for the Badgers, on the shooting end of things, for Marquette, in his opinion, on the defensive end of things. If either one of those teams could build some consistency where those deficits exist, they could do some damage, but we're starting to really run out of time.
Yeah, that's just it. And, you know, they have not consistently, you want repetition, they have not consistently shown consistency. Look, this has been the nature of both these teams this year, and sticking with Marquette, you know, as good as they can be, as athletic as they are, you know, somewhere there's this mental block of being able to just put the same effort on the floor day in, day out in terms of game time, you know? And I want to tell you that, you know, maybe they can turn on the jets, you know, in NCAA tournament time, and they could, but I think that's going to be as much about who they are playing as it is, you know, it's the team itself. But I agree with Ben. How could any team want to go out there and face Marcus Howard? Because in any given night, he can put up 50 on you.
Yeah, and it seems, and I know it's not, but when people are very, very skilled at what they do, they make it look effortless.
Right.
And that's what Marcus Howard does. He just makes it look effortless, throwing it up there from wherever he is on the floor and letting whatever happen. And it would be a scary proposition when you look at all of the components Marquette has, if they could figure out, again, how to put it all together on a more consistent basis.
Yeah, I think, too, for me, when I think about the NCAA tournament, I think about Marquette. The one thing I'm going to put out there is I have got to believe the competitive nature of Marcus Howard, thinking about a first-round exit. I think, man, can you imagine that fire that's got to be burning in him saying there's no way this is going to happen twice?
And do you wonder then as well what kind of extra, I don't know if effort's the right word, but this extra bit of determination on Wojo's part, knowing that listen, we've not gotten out of that first game in the years we have made it to the tournament. Mm-hmm. I've got Marcus Howard in his final season. We've got to make a name for ourselves, so to speak. We've got to do more damage with this upcoming tournament. It almost feels do or die.
There is that feeling, yeah.
You know, for both his legacy as a coach and for Marcus Howard's legacy as a player.
Yeah, you know, the funny part is you're right, because you think about legacy, and legacy in sports is always built around performance in big games.
Yep.
You know, and you can look, for example, you know, Robert Horry had a great NBA career, but his legacy was built upon what he did in the playoffs, mm-hmm. with the Rockets and then with the Lakers. And so you've got a four-year tenure at best to be able to do that in college basketball. And no Marquette fan is going to question what Marcus Howard has been to the Marquette Golden Eagles basketball program. But that's Marquette fan. When you go beyond that and you think in terms of national legacy and national reputation, most people are only going to look at the NCAA tournament. They're going to look at the Big East tournament. They're going to ask, yeah, he put up some great numbers in regular season games, but so what? So, yeah, there is this element of, you know, right here, right now, and there is a legacy question to it. And I hope he's able to do that.
All right. Austin's telling us we're up against a break. Before we get to all of that, first I want to say hi to Fritz Schubert, who's listening in La Crosse on 1057FMTheFan.com. Thank you, sir, for tuning us in this evening. Also, don't forget, after tonight's Bucks-Sixers game, it's the Pick and Save Pro Hoos postgame show with our friend Bill Baby Tau Schmidt. He'll be here taking your calls and reactions to tonight's matchup down at the Fiserv Forum. When we come back after the break, it'll be time for headlines. It'll be time for headlines, Mr. Professor, as Mark D'Antonio has resigned at Michigan State. What does that have to do with us? Somebody in a windbreaker. We'll get to it next.
That's a hot news tip for your radio. It's the headlines. Tell me, have you heard it? Headlines. Read all about it, baby. Headlines. Headlines. Headlines.
Once again, welcome back in. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan, a radio.com station. As we said prior to the break, leave it right here as the Pick and Save Pro Hoops postgame show with Bill Baby Tau Schmidt will be following this Bucks 76ers game as they're making their way towards the end of the third quarter. So once the Bucks game ends, Dan and I will step aside. But in the meantime, let's get to some headlines. And Daniel, we got some breaking news this week out of Michigan State as Mark D'Antonio decided to resign suddenly, inexplicably, got his, what was it, $3, $4 million signing bonus, player bonus, some whatever kind of bonus you want to call it, got his buyout money.
Thank you.
And signed a piece of paper that said, I'm going, and why does this have anything to do with us here in the state of Wisconsin? Because the man in the windbreaker is one of those that's being talked about as a potential replacement, and that's Brett Bielema. And I say to Michigan State, by all means, please hire him.
Oh, man, he's
hire
the best guy
now.
For the job. Oh.
Yes. You know, and it's funny because there are some out there who thought with the job that he did at Wisconsin that he would be a perfect fit for Michigan State back in the Big Ten. Maybe didn't get the credit or demise, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, at Arkansas, considering what Arkansas did this year. Maybe it wasn't so much a Brett Bielema problem as it was a cultural type
institutional
mm-hmm. right that's going on down there with the Razorbacks. So Brett Bielema is ascending fairly quickly on that Michigan State short list, along with some others. You know, you hear things like Mike Tressel, who will be the interim head coach, whether or not they would make him the full-time coach. You hear Shermer's name coming up again. Narduzzi from Pittsburgh. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a number of names coming up, but I'm more interested in the Bielema thing. Do you think Bielema, I mean, we pick on the windbreaker quite a bit on our show, but in all honesty, do you think Bielema would be a good fit at Michigan State?
The one thing I'll say about Brett Bielema is that he could recruit, and I don't think it matters if you're Wisconsin or Michigan State. he had the ability to relate and resonate with young players trying to make a decision in terms of where to go. And I think Wisconsin and Michigan State have always kind of been similar programs in the sense that they've been very close to breaking through but never quite could. You know, and so I think you bring in a Brett Bielema to that kind of culture. And honestly, Don, let's face it, Michigan State needed a culture change. They've had all kinds of challenges over there. And Brett Bielema could be the guy. The other part that I think is going to be attractive for any team looking at Brett Bielema is he's got the Belichick glow. You know, he spent some time over at I mean?
I get it.
And he spent some time with the Patriots. And, you know, it's whether they're good coaches or bad coaches, those guys tend to get a second look before they're not considered anymore.
Right.
So when you're talking about a head coach that can sit down and say, hey, I worked with Belichick, I've worked with Brady, I've done these things, you know, I've had success at Wisconsin. I didn't have success at Arkansas, but you know what? That happens. Nobody's perfect. And you know what? He's going to argue, I know the Big Ten. I'm familiar with that.
Yeah.
So it's not an unreasonable thing that he could be considered for that job. I go back to this again. Are you really telling me there isn't somebody better out there?
I know. But we've seen how many times that circle of coaches, whatever that treadmill is, they just keep getting rehashed and rehashed and rehashed. And I think that's the frustration even sometimes within the NFL. That when you see some of the hires that happen within the NFL and you see some very high quality like candidates that are out there that don't even get a look or a serious look. I think sometimes we've got guys being brought in and it's done for a dog and pony show, so to speak. It's here, I brought so-and-so in. All right, I'm gonna go get this guy anyway. It has to be frustrating. But I want to go back to D'Antonio's resignation. Now, he claims that it had zero to do with the lawsuit facing Michigan State Athletics.
Sure.
He claims that he sits down every February and analyzes the program as to his progress and whether or not he would be the right person to move forward. I think it's awful convenient that he sat down after he got his signing bonus this year and then decided to walk away when you have to realize that you've put now the university in quite the jam in finding a replacement, keeping your recruits, finding whatever recruits need to fill in the holes that you necessarily didn't get who you wanted on signing day. I just think his explanation is a little short. And if I'm a Michigan State fan, I'd be a little irritated by the timing of it.
It is, the timing is interesting. And, you know, I've always kind of felt D'Antoni is he gives the presentation of being an upfront guy. Now you don't know him and there's been all kinds of challenges with the program. But I think there's a couple options that you can look at. Number one, I think he may have found his ceiling. I think a lot of coaches get burnt out. I would not be surprised based on everything that's been going on in Michigan State. Those two things could combine, and he just kind of had that epiphany, like it's time to go. Now, I give you the financial thing is kind of an odd thing, but then the university can go after him if they want.
Right.
Here's my guess: is this is what's going on because we've seen this happen here at Wisconsin. We saw it happen with Bo Ryan. We saw it happen with Dick Bennett. I'm going to retire a little bit later in the game. I'm going to step away because there's a guy I want you to hire. And I think that could be something that we're not talking about.
Which could potentially be exactly how this all plays out.
Mm-hmm.
But with the lawsuit and the NCAA allegations towards Michigan State's recruiting,
right,
that to me is going to be the cloud. So if we get a year from now and all kinds of sanctions go against Michigan State, then D'Antonio is nothing more than we've seen out of a lot of coaches who suddenly bolt for any number of reasons that they want to put on paper and head over to ESPN or Fox and spend Seattle Seahawks, spend a couple of years and then jump right back in after things have settled down. But while you're still out there making six figures, doing essentially what we're doing now, which is talking about the game, so to speak, the team you left is in complete disarray.
Yeah.
The program is in complete disarray, and yet you got your paycheck, and you get to fly to Coop.
Yeah, well, guess what? That's the culture of NCAA athletics right now. You know, we see this in basketball. We see it in football. If you want to leave, you can leave.
Which then becomes the infuriating part when you hear about kids who want to transfer, and you get these coaches who stand on their podium in the press room talking about what a disservice they're doing to the university by leaving the university after we've spent all of this money and resources into your well-being, and now you want to go someplace else, when you got things like this where you can collect $3, $4 million and walk away yourself.
Right. And probably, and remember, a lot of that, Michigan State is a publicly funded school, so that's, you know, it's kind of taxpayer money. So between Tom Izzo and you know, Mark D'Antoni, it's kind of, thank you very much, good people of Michigan, now I'm going to be going, kind of a thing.
That pothole in the street ain't getting fixed
no,
anytime
but,
soon.
But I've got a beautiful, you know, nice mansion down somewhere in Florida right on the coast, you know.
That's the golf clubs are over his shoulder and he's getting on his private plane.
So, you know, it's not, when you put all these things together, it's not shocking that he left when he left.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised he didn't leave earlier. It seems like we've been headed down this path for quite some time.
That part I'll agree. When you talked about him being burned out, he hasn't looked the same the last two, if not three years.
I'd go three or four, yeah.
On the sidelines. Mm-hmm. He's looked like this has really kind of, for whatever reasons, weighed heavily on him as opposed to what we saw when he first took over that program.
Yeah, well, the Michigan State teams have, maybe not last year, but because they weren't expected to do much anyways, but 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they were anticipated to play much better than what they did. They underperformed. And you just get the off-field issues that were going on between maybe not having control, not being able to find control, not being able to run the program in a way that you wanted it to run. Obviously, Michigan State has been in the news for a ton of other things that we won't go into here. Everybody knows about that. I just think D'Antoni might have just said, I'm done. And if you want to look at it from a pure, cold-hearted clinical perspective, I'm going to make a business decision.
Yeah.
And I'm going to retire when this signing gets through. But again, if he does this and the university wants to try to capture some of that back, say, wait a minute, you retired after we give you the bonus?
Right.
They can go after him if they want. They might do that something quietly, like, all right, we're not going to sue you, but or if you give some of that back.
You know what? You have as much right to walk away as a kid does to enter the transfer portal.
Yep.
The only thing I don't want to see as a fan of the game a couple of months from now is the NCAA roll in and throw all kinds of sanctions on that Spartan team, even though as a Badger fan, you go right ahead. You sanction the heck out of that club. But then to see another coach pick up a paycheck and walk away after spitting virtue from the podium year after year after year. That's the only thing I want to see. Listen, I know we got to get to a break, but I want to hit one more story.
Let's do it.
Before we go. And it's a bit of a bittersweet thing. And the sweet part of it, I guess, is who the hiree was. And this was down at Vanderbilt. Malcolm Turner resigned as the athletic director, a former G League president with the NBA, was really kind of brought in to turn the culture and everything around with Vanderbilt athletics. And in a surprise move this week, he resigned from that position. Now, for everyone, I'll just say it that way, the hiring of Candace Lee as his replacement at this point, mm-hmm. She becomes the first African-American woman to be an athletic director within the SEC to lead the athletic programs, obviously at a university within that conference. Those types of milestones are things that I like to see in athletics, because we look to athletics sometimes to broaden some horizons. And I think if this is one of those marks in the sand, I don't know what I'm trying to draw in here, but you know what I mean? It just feels important that we're seeing somebody like Candace Lee taking over a program within the SEC, and I'm all for that.
Yeah, I am too, and I think Vanderbilt is kind of the perfect university to be able to make that that switch and to allow kind of this how do you want to say it to get a more progressive approach into who's going to be running your athletic department a little bit. She's more than qualified for the position. You may not see this in some of the more athletic blue bloods like in Alabama, like in Auburn, something like that. And it's not a political statement or anything like that. But Vanderbilt is in a place athletically where they're not Alabama, they're not Auburn, they're not, you know, they're not Tennessee. They have the ability to grow around a new athletic director who's bringing more to this than there's some social weight to this by her hire.
Yep.
And they have the ability to use that, which I think, you know, other universities may not be quite ready for.
All right. We gotta jump to a break before Austin steps over and just turns our mics off on us,
beat us up.
for good here tonight. When we come back, we'll wrap some things up here to get towards the top of the hour. And then at 9 o'clock, Eric Haslam from Haslam Metrics will break down basketball like no one else can, and we'll get to it all after this break. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on The Fan. Once again, this is the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan, a radio.com station. Keep it right here. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, Eric Haslam from Haslam Metrics will be joining us. We'll be right back.
It's time to talk about college sports. From Division I to Division III, some of the best college sports in the country are played right here in the state of Wisconsin. It's time for the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. Let's turn it over to host Don Wachillas, only on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Once again, welcome in to hour number two of the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on The Fan. Once again, don't forget, after the Bucks 76ers game tonight down at the Fiserv Forum, keep it right here for the Pick and Save Pro Hoops post-game show with Bill Baby Tausch Schmidt, as they'll be breaking down tonight's final at the Fiserv and get your reaction as well. With that, we jump right to the Great Midwest Bank Hotline and bring in our friend Eric Haslam from Haslametrics. Eric, good evening. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks again for jumping on the show with us. And Eric, in the first segment, we kind of gave our State of the Union address with regards to college basketball. And I guess the only way to describe it would be chaotic beyond the studio. I'm talking about the game itself. But if you're looking at it purely from an analytic point of view, has it been as chaotic from a statistical standpoint as it has been from a visual standpoint?
No, not really. When you think about the performance ratings, it's really been actually quite stable, believe it or not. And while teams like Baylor and Gonzaga are kind of right around the top right now, if you look at a lot of analytics sites, and mine is really no different from that, the two constants near the top have really been Kansas and Duke. And people have said, well, that Kansas and Duke, their records are a little bit, you know, below Gonzaga being 23-1, Baylor 20-1. But if you look at the overall performance in those games of Kansas and Duke, they kind of create a little bit of a cushion above the other team. So they've been really consistent in that 1-2 spot for the better part of the year, actually. I mean, you had Ohio State early on when they came out of the gates, they flew out of the gates. And for a while, it was really Ohio State and Kansas. But then Ohio State fell off. Duke kind of filled that spot. And now, all of a sudden, I want to say Kansas and Duke have been 1-2 now for probably a month or more. But I do know that Gonzaga is close. They are finally in. I can see these games, and the projections are all based on neutral court projections. So I should say the rankings are based on neutral court projections. And if you do a neutral court projection for a game between Duke and Gonzaga, you're talking about a difference of only a quarter of a point or something like that there. So Gonzaga is really knocking on the door to breaking that top two, but it's really been the Jayhawks and the Blue Devils.
In your mind, Eric, who has been the fastest riser up the rankings this season from the beginning of the season till this point here in February?
Well, one of the things you can do on my site is there's an average season ranking. You can see some of these teams that were a little bit lower and who have climbed up the ladder. If you look at my top 25 right now, the lowest average season ranking of my top 25 is 43.3. And I don't know if you'd guess what that would be. It's Rutgers. That's a team that really got hot, really was a team that didn't start out that great but had a lot of momentum. Now they're starting to cool off a little bit more, but that's an example of a team that really rose quickly. Another one is a Big Ten team is Illinois. Illinois, a lot of people thought they were going to be really good. I don't think people thought they were going to be this good fighting for the Big Ten title, but they've got a lot of talent. Kofi Coburn is a big contributor. Nobody really saw him coming. You have the Sunmu, you have Frazier. You have a lot of talent on that team. So those are a couple Big Ten teams that kind of upstart teams that nobody really saw coming that rose really quickly.
So they've risen really quickly, but I know one of the things that you manage and you pay close attention to is momentum. So just, I don't know what you want to call it, scientifically? Right now the whole season feels like a string theory would be easier to explain, but is momentum and quickly rising the same thing in your system, or is it, do you measure momentum in a different way?
With momentum, you kind of look at, and the way I always tell people about how momentum works is I assign a performance rating to every single game, and there's always an expectation based on, say, you're the number 33 team in the country and you're playing the number 200 team in the country. There's going to be an expectation for that particular situation. And when the game ends, you get a score based on what the expectation was. And these rankings are constantly in motion. But when you look at these expectation scores, you get those for every single game. And so when you try to figure out momentum, you're going to look at the average of, say, the last 6 to 10 games. So I look at the last 6 games, that's an average. Last 7 games, that's an average. Last 8 games, that's an average. And then you average those out, so then you get an idea, okay, over the last 6 or 10 games, this is your performance rating. Mm-hmm. Then you do the same thing for the entire season. And you say, now you're comparing the last 6 to 10 games against your performance for the entire season, and that gives you an idea of who's really hot. And it's a subjective way of looking at things. Someone could say, well, look at this team. They really did well, and they won their last 3, and they won the last 3 by 20 points, and they're not near the top of momentum. Yeah, because I'm looking at that 8-game range roughly. So you could have had a few games before that were bad, and all of a sudden they're getting hot now. But just the way I chose to do things, I wanted to look more at the last 8 games as opposed to, say, the last 2 or 3.
We're talking with Eric Haslam from Haslametrics here on the Journey House College Sports Show. Eric, I'm going to need some help on this one with regards to the Badgers. The Badgers have now played 13 Quadrant 1 games, which is a pretty significant mark on their schedule. The wins only are, how will I say this, slightly below that of Kansas, Baylor, Butler, and Seton Hall. So their wins in that quadrant one area are up there with some of the better teams in the nation, and yet this still feels like, and maybe it's just coming off of what we saw against Minnesota, it still feels like a team that I'm not convinced really is an NCAA qualifier.
And for good reason. But it is kind of an odd situation when you look at it and you say they're 13-10 and they're 6-6 in conference. Granted, it's a very good conference. Coming off that Minnesota game, it was rather ugly. They shot 28% from the floor, 7 of 29 from 3, only 24%. Dimitri Trice, couldn't really find a shot, 2 of 9 from behind the arc. He's only 4 of his last 16 in the last couple games. This is a really erratic team, and that's one of the things that I gauge on my website, consistency. And right now the Badgers are number 343, which I believe makes them 11th, the 11th most erratic team in the country. Now, that being said,
wow.
13-10 is not all that bad. When you talk about it, they do have the quality wins, and the selection committee does value those quality wins. If you look at my site, looking at other teams inside my top 50, Wisconsin has 6 top 50 wins. If you look at the classic quadrant system, which I gauge using the RPI, granted, most people will look at the net now, but that's not something that you can calculate. So in my site, I look back at the old classic quadrant one system. It's very close. Mm. but they're 5-8 there as well. So they don't have a great record, but they do have the quality wins. And if you look at BrackenMatrix.com, I'm actually lower on Wisconsin than most bracketologists are. Most bracketologists have Wisconsin probably at that 9 seed or 9 spot. I have them closer to a 10. And, you know, they're 13-10, and it's not out of the, you know, the realm of what's possible for a 15-loss team to get in the tournament. We saw it the last 2 years. You had a 15-loss Florida team get in last year. You had a 15-loss Alabama team get in 2 years ago. And if the Badgers go 500 the rest of the way, you're looking at something like 14 or 15 losses. If that happens, I think they're probably safe and they're going to probably get in the field.
That's, oh, my goodness. Man, that's incredible, because it doesn't pass the window test. You know, just watching ball, yep, doesn't look the same. Earlier in the show, we were talking about the challenges that have been had across the NCAA in terms of three-point percentages. You know, across the NCAA, it's just been lower. And I'm curious, in the system that you use, is how heavily weighted, or is it weighted at all in terms of a team's efficiency at three-point shots?
Well, I grade it out. I mean, it's no different than any other year. And the only difference, I actually had someone interview me about this a couple of weeks ago and asked that question and saying, so what's happened with the three-point range? And for the most part, the number of attempts haven't really changed. The breakdown of the shooting really hasn't changed. Now, there are some other subtle things that have changed. Free throw attempt rate is down. Three-point conversion rate is down about a point and a half. And more importantly, I think offensive efficiency is down something like 4 points for every 100 possessions or something like that. But it's not as drastic as you think. It's a lot of little things here and there. And when I had this discussion with this reporter about this, it was kind of like he was picking my brain up. Why do you think this is? Do you think it's because they extended the three-point line? And another thing was increased turnovers. And I'm like, well, why would that be increased turnovers? And he said, what, is it possible that extending the line in the corners is causing players to step out of bounds? And believe it or not, I've seen that happen.
Yeah, you're right.
About 4 or 5 times in the last week alone. So I think that's one of the little side effects of extending that three-point line. You're getting those turnovers in the corners because these guys don't know where to stand, and they're so close, and there's no room, and they're getting their heels out there, and they're standing out of bounds.
I think it's crazy sometimes how things play out throughout the course of a season that, you know, when they went to extend that line, they were doing it for more of a competitive type equalization, you know, when it comes to that particular shot. But you don't think about the spacing you're leaving these kids, as far as, you know, a kid who's 6'10", who's going to take a little drop step back to get himself squared up, is going to be a lot greater than if I'm going to take that same drop step and don't necessarily think about those things. Eric, we're getting close here to the end of the Bucks game, so we're going to have to call tonight a little bit short. But before I let you go, if you had to pick a Final Four right now, not knowing any of the quadrants or where anybody is playing or anything of that nature, if you had to take a Final Four and run with it at this moment, who would you take?
Well, here's the thing. I always try to go with about something like a 1, a 2, a 3, and then maybe a little bit of a surprise. And I think if you're talking about, I really like Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga, this is going to be a good year for Gonzaga. I think Kansas has a really good chance. I really like, I'm a real big Devon Dotson fan. I think with what they got on the inside too, with Azubuike and McCormick, I think that is a Final Four quality team. After that, you're maybe looking at a Louisville could possibly sneak in there, because there were a lot of people thinking that was the number one team in the country coming in. And a team that I kind of picked from the start, and they're not playing really well right now, but it's a team I've always liked because I love the leadership, and there's a team that gets better as the season went on, is the team that victimized Wisconsin last year, and that was Oregon. And that team just seems to get better right around February or March, Dana Altman's teams. And when you have a floor general like Peyton Pritchard, boy, that team can be real. I mean, if those shooters get hot with Mathis and Duarte and Pritchard, that Oregon team can go a long way. So I guess that would probably, be my sleeper pick. They're not really much of a sleeper because they're probably on that 4 or 5 line, but still. They're not exactly a 1 or a 2 either.
No, I don't know necessarily if I would poo-poo the sleeper thing, just because of the fact that, at least for us around here, we don't necessarily spend time watching a lot of the Pac-12 just because we're old and it gets late and we're all in bed. Yeah, exactly. So necessarily it's not so much that they're a sleeper. It was just they don't get a lot of airtime, you know, the way maybe other teams do in this area. Eric, with the Bucks game as it is, we're going to cut it short a little bit today. We're going to talk to you in a couple of weeks. And as always, we really do appreciate you taking some time on a Thursday night to join us here.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
You too.
Eric Haslam from Haslametrics joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. We're going to jump to another break. And when we come back, it'll be time to shovel the funk. And then we'll leave it right here because by the time we wrap things up, it'll be all set for the Pick and Save Pro Hoops postgame show as the Bucks lead the 76ers down at the Fiserv Forum. So keep it right here. This is the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank right here on The Fan.
You know what? I want to shovel the funk. I want to shovel the funk. I want to shovel the funk. I feel like shovel the funk. I got to shovel the funk. You want to shovel the funk? Do you want to shovel the funk? Then go ahead.
Once again, welcome back in. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank. Right here, 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan, a radio.com station. Won't be too much longer, and we'll turn it over to Bill Baby Tao Schmidt as he'll take over through the Pick and Save Pro Hoops postgame show as the Bucks 76ers game is winding down at the Fiserv Forum. The Bucks with the lead. But before we turn it over to Billy, it's time for us to hand out our shovels. Austin, you are up first, my friend, as the one in charge of mission control here. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thanks for putting me on the spot first. I'm going to hand my shovel to Tyler Harrow for standing up for players choosing the right route for them and not necessarily going to the school in-state. And obviously, it worked out for him.
It sure did.
First round draft pick. Can't argue that.
All right, nice job for putting him on the spot.
Right
handled
away.
It well, Austin. Way to on your feet. That a boy, stick and move. All right, Professor, you're up. Go.
So I'm going to go two real quick. Number one to Rob Bittner and Chris Lang for taking the risk with me and watching the game on Saturday, the Badger game. We didn't know what we were going to get. Ended up enjoying it. So thank you, gentlemen, for that time. And I got to give it to Guard. You mean he had a hellish week leading up to that game. And maybe you're for Guard out there, maybe you're against, but, you know, he was able to bring that team together against a game. Arguably, they had no business winning. And the Badgers came together. They withstood a charge at the end. But you got to remember, at one point, they were up by 19 points.
Yeah.
You know, four guys in double figures. It was a really, really excellent performance. And again, I've got to give that to Guard.
I'm going to do something I don't think we've ever done in the 7 years we've been
Holy
doing this show,
cow.
Daniel, and that is double up on a shovel and give it to Guard myself because that's exactly where I was going to go with it. To see the way that team rallied around its coach, for as much of the noise that was occurring outside of that program, for those young men, that coaching staff, the athletic department, you name it, to kind of pull ranks together and go out there. I was shocked. So I was talking to the Money Train on Saturday.
What's he doing?
He's doing great.
Good.
Talking to the Money Train on Saturday, and he's telling me the spread was at 5. And I thought, are you kidding me?
That was my response.
Are you kidding me? I was expecting, you know, Michigan State favored by at least 15 going into that game. But to think it was only 5, you had a figure that the light bill in Vegas was paid for by everybody who laid their money on Michigan State on Saturday because of the fact that the spread only being 5. And I gotta say, I was there as well thinking Michigan State was going to run Wisconsin out of the gym. My storyline going into that game was going to be how the fans react towards Guard.
Yeah.
And then to see that team respond the way they did was outstanding. But then you get last night.
Right.
And you watch a team shoot 28% from the floor. I don't care if you grab a middle school team that plays on Saturday afternoons. You shoot 28%, you're not going to win a game, no matter how well you play defense. And that, Daniel, going into the rest of this season, and I know Eric was pretty optimistic about the Badgers making it to the tournament, it's going to be brutal if they're going to shoot 28%.
Yeah, if they go 28, but this is the team that we have if you're a Wisconsin fan, which is one night they're going to go 28-38%, something like that. Another night they're going to shoot 18 threes and make them. This is the personality of this team. So, look, I trust Eric, and he's telling me they can lose 15 games and still have a chance to get in the NCAA tournament. I'm stunned by that, but he knows better than we do, honestly.
All right, let's wrap this thing up as the Bucks game has gone to a close. I'm kind of prolonging it. Billy over there looks like he needs a minute to regroup after a tough game. He's exhausted after watching this Bucks 76ers game. So our thanks to Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Eric Haslam from Haslametrics. For Austin, thank you, sir. You the man. For the professor, I'm Don Wachilis. We're back in 6:22 and change because it's not even the top of the hour and it's math and I refuse to do it on a Thursday night. We're turning it over to the Pick'n Save Pro Hoops post-game show. It's coming up next. Take care, everybody.